Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for spending a lunch break with us. This session was sponsored by Occupational Health and Safety Section of APHA. I'm Lena Lander. I'm an Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, and I'll be the moderator today. Our first speaker is Dr. Hope Tisman. She's a research epidemiologist in the Division of Safety Research at the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. And she will talk about prevalence and characteristics of non-fatal motor vehicle crashes among Iowa law enforcement officers. Welcome.
Thanks to the Occupational Safety and Health section for hosting this session. And Lena already introduced me. I'm Hope Tisman. I'm from NIOSH, and I'm going to talk about car crashes among cops. I'd like to acknowledge my co-investigator on this project, Dr. Rebecca Hike, as well as all those agencies and officers who participated in the study, and then finally the NIOSH NORA Public Safety Sector for supporting this work. Now, it may not be a surprise to learn that being a cop is a dangerous occupation in our country. What may surprise you to learn is that the leading cause of death for law enforcement officers is motor vehicle crashes, and it has been for some time. Just recently in 2011, homicides and acts of intentional violence overtook motor vehicle related events. But so far in 2013, yet again, motor vehicle crashes and struck by pedestrian events are leading. The reasons for this are multifactorial. There are disparities in driver training both across and within states. As you probably are aware, cops drive in very dangerous situations, high-speed chases, bad weather. There's also issues with cultural issues and seatbelt usage and the use of personal protective devices, as well as use of the mobile data terminals are relatively new in patrol cars, and they can often lead to distracted driving. So we wanted to assess among a state-based cohort of law enforcement officers whether they had motor vehicle-related policies on hand, standard operating procedures, whether they were trained in safe driving, their attitudes about risks associated with job activities, including driving. We wanted to know what occupational safety practices they used while in and around patrol cars, and if they thought there were barriers to increasing usage of those safe practices. And then we wanted to ask them how often they had been in a motor vehicle crash, and the characteristics of that crash for the prior 3 years. So we did this study in Iowa. We randomly recruited about 162 agencies. We stratified by type, which included sheriffs, municipal, and the Iowa State Patrol, as well as size, small agencies, medium, and large. We used a publicly accessible database. And we decided to get the agreement to participate through agency leadership. There's a very top-down approach in law enforcement, and we thought that might maximize our response rate. We developed a survey. We used standardized tools where possible, including the NHTSA's Motor Vehicle Occupant Safety Survey. And the entire survey was modeled using constructs from the Health Belief Model. And we hand-delivered those surveys to leadership, who then in turn distributed to their officers. So as I mentioned, we started with 162 agencies. We found that 26 were ineligible. They had merged with local agencies or fell under the control of the county sheriff. And we got 60 to participate, which was great participation rate, 44%. It's very hard to get in touch with chiefs and sheriffs. We distributed about 1,500 surveys, and then we got 1,200 back for a response rate of 80%, almost 80%. And this is a pictorial representation of all the cities in Iowa that participated in our study. We didn't plan for this, but we did get a nice cross-section of all the quadrants. We got large cities, small cities, urban, rural, and everything in between. We also wanted to see how the actual officers compared to Iowa officers as a whole, as well as those U.S. officers. We used data from the CPS, and as you might guess, our officers in our survey were underrepresented Hispanic officers as a whole, non-white officers, and female officers. So I'd like to start off by talking about the driving characteristics of those officers in our study. About 90% of them drove a two- or four-door vehicle or an SUV, which have become very popular in rural areas. Only 9% drove a motorcycle. On average, officers worked about 43 hours a week, and half of that time was spent behind the wheel. there were significant differences across occupational characteristics of our officers in regards to driving hours. Patrol officers drove more than non-patrol officers, nighttime officers drove more than daytime, and the larger agencies spent significantly less time behind the wheel than those small agencies. The Iowa State Patrol drove the longest and the most hours per week. And the bottom finding is something that's going to come into play for the rest of the results. But the longer an officer was employed in law enforcement, the fewer amount of time, the less amount of time they spent behind the wheel than those younger officers. Statewide, about 20% of officers reported that they had been in a motor vehicle crash in the prior 3 years. Now, we found no significant differences across gender, across nighttime versus daytime officers, across whether how long they had been actually on duty that day. We found that slightly more Iowa State Patrol officers had crashed their car, and slightly more officers from those medium agencies, which was 21 to 50 officers. Again, here is the amount of time in law enforcement. The longer an officer was employed in law enforcement, the less likely they were to have been a crash in the prior 3 years. And as you would suspect, the longer an officer is employed, they move up through the ranks, and as they move up through the ranks, their job activities change. They spend more time behind the desk. So all of our results in regards to time on the job, we did control for by rank of officer. And when we did that, the p-value did attenuate, but it still reached statistical significance. Oh, a thing to note here, we did not find any association between whether they had any kind of motor vehicle training in the prior year and a crash, in their total amount of training hours on the job and a crash, whether they had a motor vehicle policy and a crash, or whether they had been trained in that policy and a crash. So the crashes, what did they look like? Surprisingly, about 80% of these crashes occurred in low speeds, in less than 49 miles per hour. 70% occurred in clear, good weather, and 64% of the crashes were in a non-emergency response call, which means they did not have lights and sirens activated at the time. Now, we asked about seatbelt use in a variety of ways. I'm presenting data in the most simplistic way we asked, which was using a Likert scale. Did you wear your seatbelt while you're driving your patrol car all of the time, most of the time, some of the time? And we got some pretty good responses. 83% of our officers said they wore their seatbelts all of the time. We did not find any differences across gender, again, nighttime officers, patrol versus non-patrol, or size of agency. What we did find, again, was that the longer an officer was employed in law enforcement, the more likely they were to report that they wore their seatbelts all of the time. This was a significant finding, and again, this was attenuated once we controlled for rank of officer. And finally, we wanted to know if they believe there were barriers to seatbelt usage. I learned by being in the field that depending on who you talk to, there were two of the most common excuses or reasons were that the design of the seatbelt makes it difficult for them to get out of the car quickly. They don't want to feel like they are trapped in their car if they need to egress very quickly. And the second most common is that the seatbelt gets tangled in the gun holster, and they cannot get that gun out, and they cannot get out of the car quickly enough. Those were the two leading reasons, but statewide, only 20% of our officers said, yes, there's significant barriers for me putting that seatbelt on. So for some conclusions, we found 20% of our officers had been in a motor vehicle crash in the prior 3 years, but most occurred in safe driving conditions, daylight, clear weather, non-emergency calls, and relatively low speeds. We did find as the time in law enforcement increased, the probability of being in a crash decreased. Now, whether this is reflective of fewer driving hours or whether this is reflective of a toning down is unknown. I'll tell you, regardless of whether it was Iowa, I work with officers in California, officers in Las Vegas, there's a general trend that as officers spend more time on the job, they lose that aggressive edge, not just in driving, but in foot pursuits and everything. So that might be reflected here. And as you would expect, officers who spent more time behind the wheel reported more motor vehicle crashes. Now, overall, reported seatbelt usage was very high. We originally went into this study thinking that the whole problem with motor vehicle crashes and cops was seatbelt use. We found that it's a lot more difficult than just seatbelt use. And again, we did find that more seasoned officers were more likely to report wearing their seatbelts. Some different things we're coming up with a NIOSH number document on these study results, and one of our recommendations is mentoring. Older officers, we find, may informally mentor those younger officers in a variety of occupational safety and health practices. And in the criminology literature, they have found that formal mentoring programs have led to higher job satisfaction in younger cops, as well as a stronger work ethic. They've obviously never been evaluated for how they impact occupational safety and health practices. So I believe I left some time for questions, and my contact information is up on the board.
Excellent presentation. We have some time for questions. I'll start. Do you think there was over-reporting of seatbelt usage, and that did that over-reporting vary by experience and time on the job?
So as I mentioned, we recruited at the agency level, and what that meant is that the sheriff or the police chief distributed the surveys. They also collected the surveys. Now, we did this to maximize response rate, but the officers were allowed to mail it back to us. Everything was anonymous. We made sure of that. Law enforcement culture is a very private world. So we did everything we could to ensure truth in telling in seatbelt usage, but I'm sure we picked up a little bit of that. I'm sure they believe their chief looked up their responses. So I believe we picked that up. But I will tell you, like I said, anecdotally, from my time in the field, seatbelt usage was much higher than I thought it was going to be. But the next time you're driving, turn around and look if a cop passes you and pay attention. 9 times out of 10, they're not wearing their seatbelt. And I don't know if you're aware, many state laws are actually emergency personnel are exempt from those state laws. Different divisions throughout the country, different states and different counties and whatnot now are making their cops go ahead and follow that state law, but it's not common quite yet. Yes. Yeah, we actually have a new study with the Las Vegas PD, and they lost 3 officers in 1 year due to motor vehicle crashes, and they immediately implemented, they're calling it best practices, but that's yet to be seen, but they implemented a best practices approach to seatbelt use. They did everything from infomercials to signs on the car, just reminding officers to put the safety belt on. They made it completely hands-free. They can't be on their cell phone. They can't be texting. They actually implemented a speed cap, which means that officer, even when using lights and sirens, they can't go above, I think it's 20 miles over the speed limit. They've implemented some really, really strong, rigorous rules, policies, and training. And we are currently evaluating the effectiveness on that program. We're looking at workers' comp claims for crashes. Nobody has really looked at the engineering side of things quite yet. But like I said, I went into this thinking it was an engineering design, and then I find there's so much more to the picture. Really, when it comes down to it, when you sit in a patrol car with an officer, there's plenty of room to get that seatbelt around. Actually, in Vegas, what they did, that was the number one reason they said, I don't want to put the seatbelt on. They had officers get in and out of the car up to 100 times just to show them that they can take the seatbelt off and get off. That was part of their training as part of the new policy. Thank you.
Thank you very much.